You're welcome, Miss Svout, if I'm pronouncing you right, ne? My name is Nontlanhla Ncubendaba. I'm the chairperson of this ad hoc committee. You're welcome. You've got only 45 minutes with us in this room. The other reason that we are adding 2 minutes more because it's due to interpretation for one of our members, because she's speaking Zulu, and we have an interpreter that will interpret for you. And then you must feel free, honorable members, questions, or if you didn't hear a question, don't feel free to ask that member. Ne? Yeah, but also you must feel free. Yeah? You must not feel like you are somewhere where people will beat you, who are not going to beat you, but you are here to ask questions. Yeah. each member, before she or he asks you a question, will tell you, will introduce himself. Yeah. And then you must not take long. Don't give us background, because you know, once you give us background, you'll take long and you'll forfeit to answer the question and you won't get any points. So just go straight to your answer. And thank you very much once again for coming. My first question is, tell us about yourself and why do you think you are a suitable candidate for this post?
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you everybody for the opportunity to be here with you today. I'm very excited. My name is Jennifer Smout. I am a former parliamentary researcher, so it's very strange to be on this side of all of your faces when I'm used to sitting next to you supporting you. I have a background in politics. I have a master's in politics and creative writing. I worked at the South African Parliament between 2013 and 2017, where I left then to pursue individual consulting, and I've been continuing to work in the field of gender equality, working last year with UNICEF and the Department of Social Development to work on our National Program of Action on Violence. As you know, last year was an exciting year to work on a project like that with the changes to, I think, a political impetus to do things and the summit, and it was really a great time. This year at the moment, I'm working with the Open Society Foundation for South Africa, as of quite recently, drafting their program around violence and how they can support the work of the state and civil society. I'm a passionate feminist, and I know in the discussions around feminism in some of your previous ones, there was a concern that feminism can be exclusionary. And so I thought it'd be useful to say that for me, feminism is a movement to...
Sorry,
Callum,
disturb.
Sorry, Chairperson, to disturb you.
Sorry.
I did not receive enough scoring pages. It's only one for me.
Yeah, only one for me. You don't get my email.
I only receive one scoring sheet.
Sorry, small, ne? Honorable Farmer, do you have this packet? Remember, you disregard the progress report, ne? You just concentrate on the score sheet. Please, next time, don't disturb the candidate, ne? because it's unfair. You know, people, they prepare when coming to the interviews. Once you distract a person, you... Yeah. So we'll give it extra minutes.
Sorry, sir.
Ne? My apologies for that.
Don't worry, I'm happy to start on feminism again. I'm very passionate about it. So just for definition, feminism for me is a movement to end sexist oppression against all persons. I believe that gender inequality is bad for women and men and for transgender persons. So I do think I'm very inclusive. I believe that I'm the right person for this job because I'm passionate. This is what my career has been in for the last decade, and before that in my master's studies. I have the experience having worked outside of government with the executive and with the South African Parliament, which has given me an understanding of both our legal and policy framework, some of the relationships that can be built to improve our movement around gender equality, and also around some of the barriers that we can easily address if we work together more effectively. I think we're at a very exciting time for women, given the international changes that have been happening and the recognition that things, just because we have laws and policies, not everything is perfect. And I'm very excited to be part of that movement and that moment, and I intend to continue doing that for the rest of my life. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Maluleke.
Thank you, Chairperson. Ms. Smalt, I'm Mrs. DJ Maluleke. And for sure, when you applied for this position, you have an understanding of the core function and powers of the CGE. Can you just share with us your understanding on those things?
Thank you, Honourable Maluleke. I think the CGE has powers as they're defined in the Act and its amendment that happened in 23 whilst I was working here. Their powers are looking at enhancing the enabling environment for gender equality. So that includes things like looking at legislation, where it's working, where it's not working, looking at policy, but also around creating the necessary dialogues and conversations that need to happen to make sure that we end up in a more equal society. So the public education and the dialogues form part of their work, both in terms of an enabling environment and in terms of promoting awareness and information sharing. Last year, during my work on the Integrated Program of Action, we had the benefit of doing 9 provincial consultations. And it was very clear that there are so many people who are passionate about this work, but that not everybody has access to equal information or space to give their views. So I think that's one of the important roles that the CGE can play in supporting democracy. I did notice as well that in their recent strategic planning documents, they had items around building the strength of the CGE. We know that in the last decade, the CGE has worked on varying levels of effectiveness and it has faced challenges. But I was very impressed in their last annual report that they received a clean audit, that there were very few variations from their planning, that they had seemed to pull together and do the work effectively, notwithstanding the challenges that do come into doing gender inequality and the backlash that is often associated with that work. One of the other areas of their work is around international commitments and regional commitments and monitoring and assisting government to monitor the work that South Africa is doing to achieve those. So, for example, at the moment it's the Commission on the Status of Women happening in New York. We know that they have an important role to play in supporting a different perspective, being somewhat separate from government in how South Africa is doing. And I think the CGE has an important role to play in building relationships. We're not going to go far alone, especially in gender equality. And I think they have because they're separate from any particular branch of government, they can sometimes have a more open space. They can sometimes appear more neutral, whether that's the case or not is, you know, depends on the politics of the day. But I think they have a nice space there for inviting people to dialogue, for making sure we include all types of voices, and for expanding our ideas of what it can mean to live in an equal society. Thank you.
Honorable Standa.
Thank you very much, Chair.
and welcome. My name is Terry Stander. I'd like to ask whether you believe that the Commission for Gender Equality is a political environment, and how would you handle the human rights for sex workers in today's environment?
Thank you, Honourable Stander. It's my belief that we are all working in a political environment, whether we are acknowledging that or not. Unfortunately, the work around gender inequality means coming up against forces of power. So power implies politics, but in terms of the definition of what the CGE is supposed to be doing, they are supposed to be a neutral body that isn't influenced by the politics of the day or the ruling party, but by our laws and our constitution, which is very lucky in South Africa because we have the best laws and constitution in the world. So I'm very excited for the progress in actualizing those. I think one of the ways in which our law is failing, though, is in terms of the decriminalization of sex work. It's very clear to me that if we're going to talk about advancing gender equality, then we need to be consulting with the people whose rights we want to affect. And sex workers have made it very clear in South Africa that they need decriminalization to practice their work in a safe environment, to access healthcare, to stop being abused by police and taken advantage of. And so I'm very much in favor of that. I'm very impressed with the position that the CGE has taken on this, and in Parliament, both from the Women's Committee and the Multi-Party Women's Caucus. I think we're on the right side of history here, and I think we need to listen to women about how they want to live our lives. And just in another matter is that many sex workers in South Africa are transgender, and so when I'm speaking about gender equality, I'm not speaking about a gender binary. So when we've got transgender sex workers being arrested and put in the wrong gender holding cells, this places them at further risk of abuse and stigma. And so we really need to be thinking broadly when we're talking about gender inequality for sex workers and advancing their rights, to make sure that their voices are heard and that we do what is in their best interest.
Honourable Kaula.
Mbonga Sihlalo. Mina nguSibongile Kaula. Owami nje umbuzo, bengifuna ukwazi ukuthi uma kwenzeka uyawuthola lo msebenzi, yini ongasilekelela ngawo njengogovernment ukuthi labantu besifazane batholakale nabo benesithunzi, njengokuthi nje mhlambe ukwakhela izindlu lakusibonile kwamasho kube ney'tomo, nabantu besifazane uthole iy'ngane y'khishwa ngamawindi ngenxa yokuthi indlela okwakhelwe izindlezi kuyona ayikho semthethweni, akubhekelelwa ukuthi kuzohlala abantu, kakhulukazi imize eminingi ithinta abantu besifazane manje. Bengifuna ukwazi-ke ukuthi yini onozosisiza ngayo ukuthi bayibone abantu besifazane bekhululekile, behlala endlini ezisesimeni esi-right nemindeni yabo, nothi lesi siminyamento nto umama uhlala endlini encane kanjalo, futhi umhlaba wenze sure ukuthi abantu besifazane siyababona bethole umhlaba, bekwazi ukulima, bakwazi ukutshala nokufuya kanjalo. Okunye engizokusho nje kokugcina ukuthi sibabone abantu besifazane nabo bedlondlobala nangokwezomnotho kwezamabhizinisi. Sibone ukuthi ke sibone ukuthi naye le mbabone ziranwa abantu besifazane. Okugcina ngci, sinale nkinga yabantu besifazane othola basebenza kulabo abantu mhlambe lakho ma-China, othola ukuthi abanikezwa ngisho ama-maternity leave funeka asebenze noma ekhulelwe. Ungasiza kanjani lapho ukuthi bathole isithunzi? Ngiyabonga.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just roughly my if you are going to be appointed as a commissioner, if we give you that opportunity, to make an example, currently we are facing some floods in Gwamashu. How are you going to assist us? Because these houses are being occupied by the grannies and their grandchildren. how are we going to assist us? Because those houses, we know that they were not properly built and are not a good for to be occupied by women. Secondly, how are you going to assist by bringing, how are we going to assist to bring back or to restore the women's dignity, ensuring that they are not discriminated socially, their land rights are also restored, and they are good when it comes to the economical issues. Lastly, how are you going to ensure that their land rights are restored? And there is also a challenge that we are facing currently, especially the women who are working in the, who are employed by the Chinese for by the Chinese people. They are not receiving their maternity rights, their leave rights. How are we going to assist the commission so that these women's dignity and rights are properly restored? Thank you.
You are having only 3 minutes, and when I know and listened to the questions that they ask you, they are more than three. They are more than three. So what you are allowed to answer only two, ne? Only two.
Chair, I think that we must have an agreement going forward that you can ask one quick thing. For example, I asked you, are you interested in the position of chair, or do you think that CGE is politicized, and then one that is requires a little bit of a deeper thing. But the three questions are good questions, Makaula. They are very good, but they require 3 minutes each. We have gone. So siyazama ukubalansa kancane. So going forward, and then it's also difficult to ask the candidate, pick two. We have gone.
Honourable members, it's Samizan. Honourable members, there's no way that we'll treat our candidates unfairly. Because one, candidates have got only 3 minutes, members have got 2 minutes. So as and when you are taking more minutes or you relate a story, long story, that's where you take most of the time. And remember, at the same time, our candidates, they've got their own things also, where they want to present an issue and then answer the question. So please, let's not be unfair. I cannot prescribe on how do you ask questions to candidates, but please don't put our candidates in a situation whereby, you know, it will be unfair. A person will have to start by giving you a background, explain something else before she goes and answer the question. Please, let's minimize this. You've got only 3 minutes. If you want to answer the three, it's up to you, but you have only 3 minutes.
I'll do my best, Chair. Thank you. I think Honourable Kaula raises points that are linked, so I'm going to do my best to answer them in a linked way. We're talking about the living conditions of the majority of people in South Africa still not being suitable for their human dignity. And we're also talking about access to land and land rights. And we know that this has been a contentious issue over the last year and that there's steps being taken to redress this. So I think what I'd like to say is I was looking at some of the living conditions last night. We know that 41.3% of households in South Africa are woman-headed. We know that 52% of houses in traditional areas are woman-headed. These issues of land are very important. It's not for me, and it wouldn't be for me as a commissioner, to pass judgment on how people want to live. It's important to consult and to ask what their opinion is. I am very concerned about the traditional courts bill that was just passed, and that it often takes away people's ability to opt out of living in a traditional area and access their rights in terms of the constitution. That might not be a popular view to hold, but it's based on me reading the submissions that were made by people coming from those areas and the work that civil society did. So I think one of the things that I would do is, given that this law has passed, work with communities and see how they are interested in working with that law, whether they want to challenge it, whether they want to participate with it and make it work for them. In terms of the floods in KwaMashu, that's really unfortunate. I'm from KZN, so I know very well where that is, and I think we really need to work with local government more effectively, because those are the people who often hold the purse strings on building houses that are appropriate and influence the decisions that are made on where people get to live. So I think that's an important area of partnership that the CGE needs to build, and that's something that I would like to do. Thank you.
Thank you.
much, Chairperson. Thank you very much. My name is Liesel van der Merwe. It's good to hear that you are very passionate about these issues that you're articulating, and it's good to have a feminist amongst us. You are an expert on the issues of gender-based violence, and I would like to know from you, firstly, tell me what you think is our, why are we failing in the war against gender-based violence at a policy level, and otherwise, what are your suggestions? Can you give me a critique and some suggestions? And also, what do you think we should be doing, or what should the CGE as a body be doing in terms of addressing the gender pay gap?
Thank you, Honourable Van der Merwe. My work has definitely been in terms of gender-based violence, and last year having worked with the government on trying to get a clear policy program, some of the things that I became aware of were, number one, we have fundamentally great laws. We have incredible laws in South Africa that outline what is and isn't a crime and where we can make sure that resources should be allocated. But we don't often allocate our resources effectively. So we have a challenge of resources in different areas. We have a challenge of unequal resources against provinces. For example, the Department of Social Development spending around shelters varies from province to province. Different provinces get different amounts per person in a shelter. And it varies between shelters in a province. That's something that we need to address, is standardizing the resources we allocate to this problem. The second problem that we have is a number of parallel processes happening at the same time. So during the time that I was working on the POA, we also had a process around the white paper on safety and security. We also had processes around the Department of Social Development working on an LGBTI policy. This year, I believe we'll be working towards an NSP that's more coherent, and that could be a tool to draw these various policies together. But at the same time, there's also consultations around a strategy on femicide as though they're separate. So I think what we really need to do is make sure that we have the right people in the room talking about this as a coherent strategy. And that did happen from time to time last year, but it's not happening as a regular practice. This results in wasteful expenditure. So some suggestions I would make would be around consolidation of structures to address violence, making sure we have adequate budget for specialized structures like the Tutuzela care centers and the sexual offences courts. And then in terms of the gender pay gap, I think the gender pay gap is really important because women are doing the same work as men for less pay. But we also need to talk about the minimum wage and how many women have been excluded from the standard minimum and are now going to be paid less as domestic workers, as farm workers. So when we're talking about the gender pay gap, the assumption is that you're getting paid. And I think for so many women in South Africa and so many people, that isn't the case. So I would like conversations around the gender pay gap to be talking about skills, to be talking about redress, but also to be talking about how do we bring more people into the formalized working sector, and how do we support informal workers.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon. Jennifer Smart. My name is Story. Leave the ma. Story. Yeah, I know you have got a lot of experience as far as I see in your CV. I just want to know, because you are quite conversant with the SDG, especially number 5, in terms of elimination of all harmful practices. Maybe you can explain to us what, if you were to be appointed, what would you do with some of the cultural practices that women in this country are still subject to?
Thank you for honourable story. I think one of the things I saw was that last year the CGE did work with traditional leaders to look at how the sector can be transformed. These are difficult conversations to have because though culture is a long-standing part of South Africa's history, we also know that culture can change in the advancement of democracy, and that's why we all get to have this really nice multi-party democracy that we have today. And so I think, again, this is the elimination of harmful practices is useful to talk about what we're talking about. So we're talking about ukutwala, and goes by a number of names. We're talking about bride kidnapping is the English translation in general. We're also talking about circumcision of young boys that results in a number of deaths every year, which is a gendered practice. So I think one of the things we need to talk about is if we need to make sure that our constitution allows for cultural practices that are in line with the constitution, we need to talk about regulation, how we can support with the infrastructure, for example, health facilities and the issue of traditional circumcision, and how we can work with public education to make sure that people know their rights and people make sure that their daughters aren't kidnapped or given away without their permission. I had a look at the marriages and divorces statistics last night, and it was really worrying to me that there were 70 civil marriages and 77 customary marriages where the bride was younger than 18, and only 10 across both types of marriages where the groom was. Concerningly, in some of those civil marriages, that was this bride's second marriage, and she's under 18. So I think we do have a lot of work to do, and I think it's important not to underestimate that these conversations are going to be difficult, and that disagreement doesn't have to mean conflict. It can mean an understanding, and it's part of a healthy working relationship with traditional leaders. I think it's important to get Controlesa involved in these discussions, and it's important to get SALGA as the other local government partner involved in these discussions to make sure that where they're happening, they're safe and legal.
Honourable Velma.
Thank you, Chairperson. I, Ms. Smart, I'm Womania Drukhan, and I have a sign language interpreter voicing for me, that's Trudy. You've mentioned everything in terms of the vulnerable groups, but you haven't mentioned people with disabilities. You see an increase in violence against people with disabilities, children with disabilities, adults with disabilities who can't voice for themselves. And also the albinism as well, we see an increase in violence against them and killings for them for their body parts, for muti, etc. So now if you should be appointed to the CGE, and with all of your experience, your research, your work, etc., what could you do to make sure that the violence against all vulnerable groups decreases or increase awareness in the various areas of society? You know, the very, very silent groups who are not verbal enough. On CGE level, what would you do to decrease that violence? Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's a very important question. I read an essay last night that said 1 in 2 persons with disabilities in America will be affected by violence. And that means they have those statistics. That's 50%. That's a really shocking number. And I think there's a number of things. So we have a criminal justice system that doesn't effectively cater for disabled victims of violence to accurately tell their story. It doesn't necessarily have the facilities for them to wait in a way that's dignified in court or in a police station. And it doesn't always have sign language interpreters. It doesn't have people who are able to deal with people with mental disabilities, for example, children. So we have a number of systemic and structural things that we need to address through better allocation of resources, implementing the policy we already have, because we're lucky, we do already have that policy. In terms of making sure that the CGE effectively hears from those groups, they're very simple things. For example, booking venues for conversations that are accessible, making sure that they have, for example, a wheelchair ramp. This seems like a small thing, but it's very difficult for people with disabilities to get around here in Parliament, so never mind in the major public sector. So that's one way, making sure that we have venues that are accessible, that allow people to come and participate, that have suitable translators and sign language interpreters, and that where children with disabilities want to make their voices heard, they have appropriate support, both emotional and physical. So that's one thing. The other is to make sure that these issues get more attention. We talk about vulnerable groups in South Africa a lot, and I think since the Department of Women changed from women, children, and people with disabilities, we tend to talk about people with disabilities less, and that's very worrying. I think they've been allocated to the Department of Social Development, a department that is really overburdened in terms of its services. So, you know, maybe we could raise conversations about how we could better accommodate these people at a departmental level and how we can make sure that their voices are mainstreamed, not just allocated to small tokenistic gatherings. So I think that's very important. In terms of levels of violence, I wish that I could make levels of violence decrease. It's been my job for the last decade to look at how much worse things are getting. And I think all we can do is, one, not give up, two, make sure that we are informed about our rights and that we can help other people to be informed, and make sure that when we're sharing information about rights, that it's shared in an accessible way. We have a shortage of Braille machines, for example, at schools. We need to make sure that that's addressed. We need to make sure that these lessons are built into our education curriculum and that they carry on into the communities where people live. Thank you.
Honourable Marov.
Thank you, Chair. You mentioned some of the practices that are harmful, but you didn't refer to FMG, and my information is that it is increasing. So I just wondered if you had any idea about that, and then linking that with the SAPS and the justice system that is inadequate. How would you see your role within within the commission to be able to highlight that and bring it to the attention of our lawmakers and those who provide budgets?
Thank you, Honourable Robinson. According to my best information, the practice of FGM is in existence in South Africa. It's not a South African cultural practice. A lot of the times the people who are presenting at facilities are people from refugee and migrant communities who have equal rights to access those health facilities. So we don't actually collect data on it. And that's a problem for a lot of the challenges that women and children face in South Africa and that transgender people face, is that we're not collecting the data we need to make informed policy choices. So I think if this is a concern and if it's been brought to the committee or Parliament's attention, then we need to talk about how we're collecting data, where we're collecting it, and what we can do with that information. In terms of the criminal justice system, there's been so much work done on how we can improve it. I think we're very beneficial in South Africa in that we have an active civil society who is very well informed and produces research. Often this research doesn't get to the platforms it needs to get to, and I think we can do better to make sure that we use the information we already have more effectively. So in my application, one of the things I said was that we have a challenge in that we have a lot of commissions of inquiry or summits, and we have all these resolutions and recommendations, and it's really hard to take those up because by the time those recommendations come into force, we've often already done the budget for the following medium term. And so we're not really having the opportunity to make sort of short-term interventions where they could be really effective. So I think it's important to keep the discussion going with the National Treasury. I know, for example, that Parliament almost every year recommends that the CEGE gets more of a budget, but that conversation comes when the budget's already been passed. So that's too late. We need to talk about how we engage and when we can engage, and making sure that we use the spaces that we have effectively. Thank you.
I wanted to say something, but it's fine, because they are using abbreviations, FGM, for the benefit of South Africans. Yeah. But it's fine. Dr. Maisela?
Thank you. We all talk about the systemic and institutional problematics about inequality here. And nobody talks about the genesis or the causative agents of this gender inequality. And if you don't diagnose the disease properly, you can't prescribe proper medication so the patient may be terminated. Now, how would you solve this conflict of gender inequality and mediate the communities to work, motivate the communities to work together to deal with these interpersonal problems, and how do you intend to deal with systemic, institutional, and gender inequalities problems? Can you solve inequality problems through legislation? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I hope, Dr. Maisela, we have asked all your questions.
I think
I've been thinking about this question a lot lately. Recently I was asked, why do I do work in gender inequality? Because it's unlikely that a really big change is going to happen in my lifetime. So have I committed to a job where I'm going to be unhappy for the rest of my life? And I don't think I am. I think the law and policy and the way that we define systems and structures is a line in the sand that we've drawn, and we said we're not going to go any worse than this. But it is the beginning of a process. It doesn't mean that just because you have a commission on gender equality that everybody there will be practicing gender equality. We all come from society that is patriarchal, and by that I mean where people are accepting and where people are fine with the idea that men are dominant over the rest of the people in society. And that's very true regardless of where you are in South Africa. I think it's we all experience that from every walk of life. So it's not a problem that one person can solve, but it is a problem that we each have a part to play in resolving. So if I'm talking about solving gender inequality in communities where, as I said earlier, the majority of households are actually women-headed, we need to talk about recognizing women's value in society beyond the idea that women are valuable as mothers or sisters or daughters or wives. We need to recognize that women are valuable for all their potential that they can contribute. We also need to recognize that for men, gender inequality is very harmful. It tells them that they have to be strong all of the time, that they have to be the breadwinner. And those ideas in South Africa, where very many people struggle to access work and economic empowerment, can have a psychological impact that I think is linked to problems of violence. I also think we have huge community problems around substance abuse. So, you know, there's ways to think innovatively about how do we get into communities we're not already reaching. And I think if South African breweries can reach every community in South Africa, then so can the Commission for Gender Equality. It means that we need to make an effort and we need to work hard. We don't need to go to work from 8 until 5 and then go home. It needs to be something that we do in our real lives. In terms of the systems, I think it's been very clearly identified in a number of commissions of inquiry, in terms of parliamentary hearings on the laws that we have, where things are working and where they're not. And I think it's time to start thinking about how do we change things. And change is difficult and scary, and we might get worse before we get better, but it's about having the commitment to hearing people's voices and making sure that we identify what exactly the barriers are. And they might be different in every community, so it's about taking into account that context and working with the people who can make the change. Thank you.
Honorable Maluleke, we are done. Honorable Thembekwayo.
Thank you very much. Honorable Thembekwayo. As you have finished us during the requirements of the chronological particulars of your employment or work experience since leaving school, you were employed amongst other employers, most important, the UNICEF, on action addressing violence against women and specifically the LGBTIQA+ persons, including where you worked at Triangle Project as researcher, still on LGBTIQA+, including also freelancing for various NGOs, writer and researcher. My question is, the transgender persons are experiencing a problem at Home Affairs with regard to their application of IDs, their identity. So how would you help in that regard, including the problems that they are facing in Western Cape specifically regarding the housing problem? Thank you.
Thank you. I think that's a really important issue that you've brought up. We have an act, I think it's 49 of 2003, which says that people who are not happy with the way that their identity is reflected on their ID have a right to go to Home Affairs and have that changed. We also have certain criteria around that. So some of the challenges include the fact that to get psychological assessments that you need to change your marker, you have to have the money to go for those psychological assessments, and those take a long time, which most people do not have the access to. So we're almost trapping people in an identity that is not their own by the virtue of the fact that our law requires you to use services that are expensive. So that's one thing. I think we really need to think about what are the practical realities for people who are trying to access gender marker changes on their ID. The other is the norms and the ideas that are held by people working at Home Affairs. So I was reading a case probably about 2 years ago where the person was calling Home Affairs. They would never give them anything in writing to say that they'd received the application or that they were considering it. They would only give them information over the telephone. So there was no way for that person to go back to Home Affairs and say, "Hi, I was here last week and actually you said that you'd give me information." There was no change. So I think we need to think about systemically how can we improve our processes of registering that change. In terms of access to housing, I think that's really, you know, I mentioned it briefly in terms of the police, but in terms of housing that's accessible, we know that we have a shortage of shelters for people who are living in South Africa who don't have a home or who are fleeing an abusive relationship, and that those very often don't accommodate transgender persons because of stigma associated of what it means to be transgender. So I think there's a way we need to go towards addressing public awareness and understanding of what it means to be transgender, that this is not a threat, that this is a person who is just born into a body that doesn't feel like they've been assigned the right gender. So we need to do public awareness. We also need to make sure that we build independent facilities for those people who don't want to be accommodated in existing shelters. And again, it's about listening to the people themselves. It's about asking them what do they want and what would be the most accommodating thing for each of them. It's positive that I believe DSD is looking at this now in terms of sheltering, so I think we need to monitor that conversation. There's also concerns about access to healthcare for surgeries, for example, or hormonal treatments. So those are things we need to look at in the budget to make sure that we're addressing the laws that we have with a proper budget. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Jennifer. And my name is Grace Seki. My question is, if appointed as a commissioner, how would you make sure that the institution, being the CGE, leaves a footprint in our deep rural areas, taking note that most of their offices, or all their offices, are situated in urban, the provincial offices are situated in the or located in the urban areas. And just short, are the recommendations of the CGE binding in your view? Thanks very much.
Thank you, Honourable Seke. I think Parliament has an amazing program called Parliament to the People, which they run, I think they normally do it about twice a year. I'm not sure how often it's been happening recently. But I think that's one way of getting your conversation to the places where it makes it convenient for people to come and talk with you. Inviting people to public consultations in urban areas is simply not the way to reach people in rural areas. It's too expensive. There's very rarely the suitable translation people in place in urban areas that can assist with an honest dialogue. And so the necessity is to go to the rural areas and have those conversations there. We can't expect that the ordinary South African can make the effort to come to the people who have the power. It's important for people with power to be part of communities. So there's about going to the communities. There's also about making sure we use the structures that are in existence. So where you have women's groups, women's NGOs, where you have gender desks at municipalities, where you have informal community advice officers, it's about building those partnerships to make sure you hear of a problem straight away and it doesn't take 6 months to get to you before you then have a meeting and maybe the issue is resolved and maybe it isn't. So it's about thinking strategically about how are we being responsive rather than reactive. In terms of the recommendations of the CGE, I think we have a strange situation in that the CGE comes to present to Parliament and they make their recommendations to you and to the, they're bound by the Constitution. But it hasn't been the case that they have been binding. I think it's important for us to think strategically about how any of the recommendations made by all of our institutions of government, whether they're institutions supporting democracy or branches of government, are held accountable to decisions and recommendations that we make. So it would be my opinion that they should be binding. These are people who are experts working with good legal advice from their legal department. And I think we, where they are found to be not binding, then we need to reflect on what is the usefulness of an institution like the CTE or of a parliamentary women's committee or of, you know, any of our provincial legislative structures. So I think it's an issue that we haven't really unpacked effectively yet, and it's an exciting thing to take forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, thank you very much, Ms. Mount. You know, I'm used to honorable members most of the time, eh? But maybe one day you'll be one. Who knows? Thank you for coming. Do you have any question that you want to raise with us?
I do have one question. I know that there was an investigation into amalgamating the Chapter 9 institutions, and it was the recommendation of Parliament that the CTE not be part of those groups. But I haven't been able to find out any information on what happened to that discussion and whether it will be taken forward. So I'm not sure whether the honourable members here are able to assist me with knowing what is happening. I do support that, the view of the of parliamentary committees that the CTE needs to remain separate from the others, that we are representing more than 52% of the population. We're representing everybody because everybody is a gendered person. So I'm interested to hear about that.
Huh? Hemen, can you
thanks, Jay. Actually, the study has been done, but the report is with the POs. There has been that report has not been finalized to say this is the political direction that is going to be taken. The decision is still with the POs. Thanks.
Okay. Marok?
I was under the impression that the decision had been won by us and that there would be no amalgamation.
Yeah, that's what I thought, ne? But I didn't want to put myself in the spot where tomorrow somebody will come and say, hey, what is happening now? Because even myself, I thought the mere fact that you are continuing with the identification of suitable candidates, that means that thing is out. There's a decision, but I'm not sure. If there are any changes, we'll be informed. But for now, we'll work on what we know and what we have before us. Yeah. Thank you very much. I'm sorry, you wanted to say something?
No. The status quo is still remaining. Nothing has been pronounced and tabled in Parliament yet. That is new.
Thank you very much for coming, Ms. Mount. I heard you saying you are coming from KZN, but when I read your CV, it says Cape Town, and I was confused. You are staying in Cape Town.
I live in Cape Town now, but I grew up in the North Coast. Of KwaZulu-Natal.
So you know Zulu. There was no need for you to be interpreted, eh?
She was taking notes. She was understanding. Okay.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll inform you of the results in due course. Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.